Hello and welcome to another video podcast. I'm Pastor Jeff Glenn, and it's my pleasure to take you through the Word each week. Today we're in Genesis chapter 34, and this is after Esau and Jacob's reunion, which was almost an anticlimactic one at that. We see that Jacob makes a few moves, and he eventually settles at Shechem. And there he builds an altar to the Lord. He's done that before in other places, but things they aren't all as they would seem at first. You know, like this is some kind of a moment where Jacob is finally settling down. While Jacob had in the past, just as he had done now at Shechem, erected an altar to the Lord, this wouldn't guarantee that his family was necessarily on board with acknowledging God as their God. And this would cause some problems, as we see. And so we see in the opening verse here, chapter 34, verse 1, "Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land." So we don't know how old Dinah is here at this point. And some commentators would say that she's his only daughter, but we don't quite know that for sure. She's, however, the only one listed, but we do know that she was born before Joseph, so that would make her the second to the youngest of those listed. So she was younger, and you know, having moved myself several times when I was younger, I do know that urge to get out and want to meet the local kids and see what there is to do in that new place that you've moved to. So it doesn't seem unreasonable for Dinah to do the same thing, to go out and see the daughters of the land, as it says here. You know, so this desire to meet some peers and have some girl time. You know, remember she's listed only among her brothers, so she's growing up only with brothers. And so this desire to get out, have some girl time, and maybe have a spa day or go get their nails done or go to the mall, whatever they were doing. You know, that's understandable. However, it's kind of a roll of the dice, especially when you're in new territory, because you know, how you meet people in a new place to make sure you're meeting the right kind of people and not meeting the wrong people. And so if you've read ahead, don't mistake what I'm saying. In fact, if you haven't read ahead, go ahead and take a second to do so now. It'll help with the rest of the chapter. So if you're back from reading after pausing, what I'm saying is I'm not saying that it's Dinah's fault or that she in any way brought on herself the events that took place. The sin was clearly on Shechem the prince. He was the one who noticed her, and as the text says here, he took her and laid with her and violated her. So the violation here is this out of wedlock marriage at the very minimum. Some commentators will call this rape, and so whatever that actually is, it's not super clear. That's why there's different takes on what this means here. So the point is, it's not uncommon to find boys hanging out where girls are at. And in this case, it's true. So Dinah caught the eye of Shechem, who used his position as prince to at least seduce her and lay with her. And so, you know, that may have been okay in Shechem, you know, to have premarital sex among people you've just recently met. And the text does indicate a genuine affection from Shechem towards Dinah. It doesn't negate the sin. This was still a sinful act. And we're not told how Jacob felt about the news, other than we're told that he held his peace until his sons came in from the field as they were tending their flocks. But we are told how they felt, that they were grieved and very angry when they found out what had happened with their sister Dinah. And so this anger and their seeking of revenge caused them to deal deceitfully with the men of Shechem. And it's all part of this non-response by Jacob. So Jacob initially delayed any kind of response until his sons came in from the field, and then he kind of left it up to them to negotiate this deal. But in the meantime, Hamor, Shechem's dad, comes in, and he has time to ask for Dinah's hand in marriage for his son, all while Jacob's kind of twiddling his thumbs or wringing his hands. I'm not sure, but he's not responding. But his sons respond. And so his sons make the deal under false pretenses, which is to, if all the men of Shechem would circumcise themselves, then they could have Dinah as Shechem's wife, which if you know what circumcision is, it left the men of Shechem weakened. These are grown men who just had a circumcision, and so they're still incapacitated when Jacob's sons show up and use that advantage to kill them, and then later go into the city and plunder their wealth and their women and their livestock and all of the rest. And so it was indeed deceitful and grossly out of proportion of a response to what had happened. And it's one that again left Jacob exposed to being killed. Again, here he is in fear for his life again, because of his inaction, allowing his sons to sort of take the lead in dealing with this very serious and egregious problem. Now he finds himself again at fear for his life, for what his sons had done and the way that they had reacted. And so, even though he had lots of livestock and lots of sons and servants and helpers helping him take care of his flocks, he still wasn't that big of a force in Shechem and in the surrounding area. So these people that now had come to know Jacob and his family as treacherous and murderous, this again gets Jacob once again on the move to escape possible retribution. And so we get to see next week kind of what the root of this current problem is, but that's for next week. For this week, we can only wonder why such a disturbing story is even in the Bible. It doesn't seem to add much value, or it doesn't seem to move the promise of putting enmity between the seed of the woman and the serpent, and it doesn't seem to further, at least at first glance, the promise to make a great nation out of Jacob. In fact, it seems to jeopardize it. So why is it even mentioned? And so it's a cautionary tale on many levels. So firstly, clearly the people of Shechem and Jacob's family had different values that weren't discussed or cautioned against or prepared for. And even within Jacob and his family, they had different values. And we'll see more on this next week. Jacob was largely silent once he found out what had happened to Dinah. He allowed his sons to negotiate this marriage dowry while they plotted to kill the men of Shechem. This solution by Dinah's brothers, it was not a solution at all. It left Dinah with no prospect of marrying, and the very real potential and probability that she remained a widow the rest of her life. And it also meant that Jacob, while he had purchased property in Shechem, now he had to move on, right? We see that God called him to Bethel, which we'll see more of next week. So I think in stories like this, we need to look to God's providence in this tragic story. We acknowledge the travesty of it all, and whether Dinah was raped or seduced, Jacob's sons and their response, it was not honorable, but God. But God can and does use the travesties of our lives for good for those who believe in Him. And that's one of the promises that we hold to when we come across things that are egregious and tragic. We know that, especially in this story, following Jacob and his sons is going to be fraught with all sorts of peril. But we know that following Jesus is not. And so for us, that's encouragement. So until next week, stay encouraged and stay in the Word.